This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, the Michigan Campaign Finance Network has released its report on spending in the 2014 elections. But first, StoryCorps founder Dave Isay wants everyone to record at least one meaningful conversation with a family member, friend, or even a stranger. That idea helped Isay win the 2015 TED Prize. StoryCorps started in 2003 with a booth at Grand Central Terminal in New York. Since then, people all over the country have participated in the Oral History Project. Special initiatives have collected stories from African Americans and military members and their families. The latest Out Loud initiative allows for those meaningful conversations about the experiences of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people. Some of those stories are being collected here in Kalamazoo during November, and Dave Isay will visit Western Michigan University on Thursday, November 5th. Dave Isay joins us from StoryCorps in New York. Thanks for being with us.
Gordon, it's great to talk to you.
What was the inspiration specifically for the Out Loud initiative?
Well, that's somewhat of a long answer. But, you know, I think basically we've done, I think, 9 or 10 big special initiatives. And, you know, one of those was kind of born at WMUK with Gordon Bolar to honor his son. And that was the initiative you mentioned in the introduction of honoring post-9/11 vets. And our latest initiative we're calling Out Loud, which is really about, largely about collecting the stories of people who are alive before Stonewall, which is, you know, the Rosa Parks moment of the gay rights movement in 1969, and capturing the stories of what life was like in the 40s and 50s and 60s for LGBT people, also in the 70s and 80s, where, you know, it's been rough for quite a long time, before those stories are lost to history. So, you know, I think that, you know, the LGBT struggle is the great civil rights struggle of our time. And there's very, very little known about what life was like for everyday LGBT people in the decades past. And it's time to get those stories while we still can. You know, I am the proud son of a gay father, and he was very interested in the idea of this project. And unfortunately, he died very suddenly a few years ago and didn't get to see this project come to be. He actually died on the anniversary of Stonewall, and he was a gay rights activist. And the next year on the anniversary of Stonewall, we launched this Out Loud initiative. So it's both personal to me and, I think, incredibly important historically to get these stories of a time which, in American history, which was really just a spiritual holocaust for gay people. And we are intent on capturing those stories.
You mentioned Rosa Parks in there, and I'm wondering if you think that Stonewall perhaps is a little bit lost to history in a way that some of those other big moments and other civil rights movements are not. For instance, we know a lot about Rosa Parks. We know about Selma. We know about, you know, the Birmingham bus boycott. All of those things are pretty well established in history, and something like Stonewall doesn't seem to have quite that same level of knowledge amongst the public. Do you think that it's something that somehow has slipped away a little bit more than those other civil rights moments?
That's a great question. You know, it's funny that you say that because, you know, the recognition of what happened at Stonewall, which is that there were a group of young transgender kids who fought back against the cops at a bar in 1969. And it was really, it was a crazy and historic battle that was won by these kids over a series of 3 nights. And, you know, years ago, outside of the gay community, people didn't really know what Stonewall was. And now, you know, the visibility has gone up so much. I mean, President Obama mentioned Stonewall in the State of the Union. So, yes, it may not be as well known, but it's getting there. However, stories like, you know the name Emmett Till, and there are so many civil rights stories and names that come up. And other than Stonewall, you know, I it's just not known to history what happened to, you know, gay and lesbian people in the 40s and 50s. I mean, there are so many stories that just have never been told. And I think that there are countless sorts of Emmett Tills and other stories, equally tragic, more tragic, less tragic, of people who lived through, you know, kind of an unimaginable period of discrimination and violence this is part of the story that we need to tell. But also, you know, the gay and lesbian story is so much about, you know, resistance and humor and all that kind of stuff. So it's not just about, you know, abuses, but about, you know, people who lived with courage through difficult times.
Have you found that there's a lot of stories similar to your family's? You mentioned your father, that people who for a long time, you know, tried to just make it through being gay, but living in a straight world and, you know, starting families, those sort of things?
God, yes. I mean, I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of these kind of stories. But, you know, I can't express enough what a wall of silence it was. I mean, we just did a story that's airing very soon of the first person who, you know, proclaimed that they were openly gay on the cover of Time magazine. And it was a guy who had been, who was thrown out of the military and, you know, it died in obscurity. I mean, there are millions of names and stories that haven't been told. Stories like my dad's story or stories like my mom's story, who, you know, lived this very complicated existence with a gay husband, knowing, you know, for a long time that he was gay and the rest of the family not knowing it. I did a speech once with someone who was a wonderful man. He was maybe 100 years old at the time. He had grown up in a town in Poland that was wiped out by the Nazis. And as he was older, he decided to draw every inch of that town. He was a house painter and then became a painter. And he drew every block of that town, every person in the town. And his daughter, who is an oral historian, had recorded him for 30 years. And every inch of that town was documented. And they turned it into a book. And I did a speech with him. It was the only time I ever met him. He died soon thereafter. But he signed my book afterwards in this shaky hand. And he wrote, "Without the past, there is no future." And I think that it's just incredibly important that future generations remember, you know, what it was in this country so that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past.
So how much progress do you see when you hear these stories? And how much do you think, well, there is still work to be done, that equality is not across the board? You know, how do those two things kind of play out when you go back and hear some of these people talk about their experiences?
I think that what you hear in a lot of these stories is so unimaginable and so tragic and heartbreaking and just kind of almost defies understanding. You know, it's a very good question. I'm not, you know, I'm kind of focused on the stories back then because with social media and all that kind of stuff, you know, we hear a lot of the stories of today. But it knocks me to my knees to hear these stories. I mean, we put one on the air a couple of weeks ago, which is just a monologue of a woman who was in love with another woman, and the other woman got married, and she said that if her husband ever died, she would be with this woman, and she died of cancer before it could happen, and the unrequited love. And I mean, these stories of that are just rich and painful, and stories about people who are lost during the AIDS epidemic, my head's kind of back in that space more and listening to those stories and collecting those stories while we still can. I mean, I think it's hard to, you know, you don't really want to compare, you know, pain. But I think that there is such documentation of, you know, young people today. And it's just what we're really focused on is this wall of silence that exists from decades ago.
The name Out Loud Initiative, was this chosen because of the secrecy which has often cloaked the lives of gay people?
Sure. I mean, I don't know if I came up with the name, but yeah, no, that was absolutely, you know, it's coming out and the idea of giving voice to voices that haven't been heard. You know, I'm excited to come to Kalamazoo. Our focus is not on San Francisco and New York. It's on small towns. It's on the Deep South. It's Kalamazoo and places where, you know, even though there was silence on the coasts, you know, we just have no idea what was happening in a place like Kalamazoo. As a country, there is no historical record, except for the work that, you know, kind of local oral historians have done. But it hasn't been kind of a focused national effort. So we're very focused on getting those sorts of stories.
I want to ask you a little bit about the oral history and StoryCorps in general. You have called StoryCorps anti-reality TV. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, I think that in many ways, StoryCorps is the opposite of reality TV because, you know, reality TV is, you know, nobody comes to do a StoryCorps interview to get rich. Nobody comes to be recognized to get famous. It's an act of generosity. Honestly, I don't watch a lot of TV only because I have young kids at home and I have a demanding job. So I can't speak from, you know, having a great deal of knowledge about reality TV, but it seems like that's more about people who are looking to get something, the people who participate in that. It's about them. And StoryCorps, you know, something we talk about around the office is, you know, it's not about you. StoryCorps is about, it's about generosity. So I think that what happens in a StoryCorps booth is very different. And it's very intimate and it's very real. And it's about, you know, reminding people what's really important in their lives and shaking you on the shoulder and just saying, you know, this is what's important. And I don't think that's really what happens on reality TV from what I understand. But maybe I'm wrong.
Has technology made the very idea of collecting these stories easier? I mean, there's a new app out there that which you guys have developed. And is this changing the game in terms of what people are able to do?
Totally. So we've had this has been a big game changer like year for us, because as you said, you know, I won this TED prize, and with the $1 million we built an app so that, you know, up until this moment, StoryCorps interviews have all been done in a booth with the help of a trained facilitator. We call that signature StoryCorps interviews, which are what you hear on the radio. But what we wanted to do is figure out if there was a way to really scale the interview experience. So we created an app where anybody, anytime, any place can record a StoryCorps interview on their mobile device and with one tap upload it to the Library of Congress. And, you know, I was concerned when we launched the app that, you know, the internet is such a coarsening place that people were going to abuse it or not just not get it. And, you know, we've had about, in the last couple of months, we've had about 14,000 interviews come in, and they've been just remarkable. Almost every single one has been done with fidelity. You know, they're not as long as a typical StoryCorps interview. Instead of 40 minutes, they're probably 14 or 15. The sound quality isn't as good, but people are having this authentic experience where the microphone gives them the license to talk about what's important in their lives and to tell someone else how much they mean to them by listening to them and saying, you know, who are you? What have you learned? How do you want to be remembered? And, you know, we're trying this crazy idea at Thanksgiving, where we're going to run the app at 1,000 miles an hour, well, 100 miles an hour, for the first time ever, where we're going to ask every social studies U.S. history teacher in the country to assign their students to record a interview with a grandparent or another elder on their mobile device using the StoryCorps app over Thanksgiving weekend, so that theoretically we can honor a whole generation of Americans over a single weekend in this way. So that is the, you know, the power of technology to help scale a human project like StoryCorps. Part of what I think is so neat about it is that, you know, I think that mobile phones in so many ways have pushed us into ourselves, you know, and mobile phones are about having phone calls with other people originally and communicating in so many ways. It's drawn us more closely into ourselves and away from one another. And I think that the power of this app is that it's the use of this technology to create real, authentic human connections. So our kind of crazy goal is to double our archive in a single weekend. And we'll see if we can do that. And we'd love everybody in Kalamazoo to be involved.
Does the idea of smartphone technology, you know, allowing sort of non-professionals to do recordings, does that sort of maybe harken back a little bit to what you did as a radio producer initially of kind of letting people loose, giving them radio equipment and saying, here, have at it, go make a documentary, go find out what's happening right in your backyard? Is this allowing maybe more of that to happen? And maybe it does ultimately get us to a point where we're using our smartphones for something other than just constantly checking our email and those sort of things.
Yeah, I think it's a progression, because I actually think that StoryCorps itself, you know, I did documentaries, I mean, a long time ago, where I would give people tape recorders and have them record. But I was the producer. I was, you know, present and helped them edit it. And then with StoryCorps, it kind of took it one step farther, because it's two people in a booth. There is a facilitator there, but they're being trained in moments on how to do these interviews and how to kind of listen in this way. And, you know, I thought that there was some magic to me being present in an interview that caused like interesting things to happen. And, you know, in the first days of StoryCorps, it was obvious that I was completely irrelevant. I mean, all this amazing stuff was happening without me being present, you know, and now with the app, it's taking it one step further because, yes, there is nobody affiliated with StoryCorps anywhere nearby. It's just kind of the instructions and the spirit of this in people's hands. And people are incredibly capable of doing this. I mean, we hear on this app, and again, I mean, we have stories, you know, since you and I started talking, probably, you know, 10 stories came in on the app. And, you know, you hear kids in, you know, sitting in a classroom, outside a classroom somewhere, frat brother or something, and they'll start talking to each other on the app. And then, you know, they might be uncomfortable in the beginning, but 15 minutes later, they're like crying and telling each other how much they love one another. You know, I think there's this real need to connect. I think we're all capable of this kind of listening and that people are very, very capable all around us. You know, all of us are capable of doing these sorts of interviews, of listening closely and, you know, having this kind of meaningful interview experience. And that was, you know, that's the idea behind StoryCorps. I was making documentaries for many years. And I came to see that the act of being listened to could be really important in people's lives and wanted to try something where the, you know, the final product wasn't what it was about. It was just about the idea of being listened to. And that's what StoryCorps is. It's, you know, we call it access to the experience. It's the chance for people to have this time with a microphone, giving you the license to talk about things you don't normally talk about, and record this interview that goes to Library of Congress and becomes part of history. And, you know, the stories you hear on the radio, well, we love them. And I'm sitting with a producer here who, and I love working on these stories as well, but really it's kind of ancillary. It's like a wonderful byproduct of the core of what StoryCorps is, which is giving people a chance to connect in this way.
12 years on since StoryCorps started, what surprises you the most about where you're at right now?
I should say that I know this won't be broadcast for a couple of days, but as we speak, today is our 12th birthday. What surprises me the most? You know, I think that what, you know, StoryCorps is very much a project about hope, I think, for everybody who participates. You know, it's a very, you know, it's a project that speaks to who we are in many ways at our best. And I think that, you know, thinking about the app, thinking about the last couple of months, thinking about the 65,000 interviews we've done and how, you know, the facilitators, you know, when they come back off the road, will always say, if you ask them what they learned, the number one lesson is that people are basically good. You know, and you hear this off the app, too. And, you know, I think when we are an amazing country, now that's not to say that if this was used in other countries, it wouldn't be equally amazing what we hear. But, you know, people are remarkable and resilient and care. And we all really care about the same things. You know, it's our families. It's, you know, people we lost, people we love, people being born. You know, you see in if you turn on CNN, you listen to the presidential debates or whatever, I mean, we seem like such a divided country. But when you sit down and listen to these StoryCorps interviews on the app, anywhere, you know, it's just a very, very different picture. And I think that it makes me much more hopeful about humanity. It makes me really less scared of other people and just, you know, proud of who we are as a country.
Dave Isay, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Dave Isay is the founder of StoryCorps. Stories about the LGBT community are being collected in Kalamazoo during November during the Out Loud initiative. And Dave Isay will speak at the Fetzer Center at Western Michigan University on November 5th. More details can be found at WMUK.org.